RadioInfluence.com.
Welcome to the MMA Report podcast right here on RadioInfluence.com. Of course, I am Jason Foy. As always, I am joined by Daniel Galvan. And this week's episode of the podcast is presented by DraftKings and Lost Empire Herbs. We're going to tell you about the great offers that both those companies have for our listeners. Come here later on in the podcast. Of course, this week's show is dedicated to UFC 251. That takes place on Sunday morning in Yas Island, Abu Dhabi, Saturday night here in the United States. And Daniel, I guess about the best way to start this show is we got to go back to last Saturday where, Daniel, I text you and you say, I know it's bad when you text me at 11 o'clock at night.
Yeah, seriously. Like, Jason has the weirdest sleeping hours. Like, this dude goes to sleep at, and then, you know, he wakes up at like 3:30 in the morning to start his work day. So he always got to, like, at least go to sleep by, who knows, 10:30, 11, like the grandfather you are. And when you are texting me in the middle of the night, 11 o'clock, I know something crazy is going on, because when it's 11 my time, it's 12 your time or something like that. Maybe it was 11 your time, 10 my time, but it just felt late as hell, and I knew something absolutely insane had transpired.
And of course, that insane thing was the fact that Gilbert Burns is out of UFC 251 and Jorge Masvidal is in. And look, it's unfortunate that it happened the way it did, but at the end of the day, Daniel, we got the fight we wanted.
Yeah, I think right away when, and you've got to feel so damn bad for Gilbert Burns, by the way. Let's take a moment and feel bad for this man who was the MVP of the COVID-19 era UFC. It was his time where he vaulted up the rankings, got the championship opportunity, was about to fly out to Yas Island and potentially be the best welterweight in the world, not to mention you get a really nice payday. And I'm sure he'll get a little bit of cheddar, but probably not a whole lot of cheddar. So you got to feel bad for him. But as soon as that fight was dropped, I think everyone in the MMA community immediately gravitated towards, okay, this is the opportunity for Jorge Masvidal to step up, because it was just it's just something that kind of happens throughout the history of this sport, is that all of a sudden things change really quickly and you get the fight that you've been wanting. And it's pretty simple. Masvidal versus Kamaru Usman was the fight at the 170 pounds. And immediately it was like, okay, both Masvidal and the UFC have kind of like put themselves in corners when it comes to negotiating. They both have given themselves to the media in terms of like saying, I'm not going to budge. What they needed to come together was a catalyst, something that forced them to budge, because it becomes an ego thing. And this opportunity for Masvidal to take this fight in Saudi Arabia or the United Arab Emirates, excuse me, to take that fight on 6 days' notice for the welterweight championship was the perfect opportunity for Masvidal and the UFC to come together.
Yeah, to me, I feel like it's a win-win situation for Jorge Masvidal. And even Kamaru Usman, in his interview with Brett Okamoto on ESPN's MMA's YouTube channel, he noted that. He's like, look, you know, this is – he goes, I've seen the narrative that everyone's putting out there about, you know, the fact that Masvidal is taking this fight on 6 days' notice. And I completely understand where Kamaru Usman is coming from. But look, let's be honest about it. Kamaru Usman is going to get a lot more money in his bank account when that check comes through from the pay-per-view points, the fact that he's fighting Jorge Masvidal as opposed to fighting Gilbert Burns. And I had this tweet on Monday where, you know, I just quoted the UFC's official announcement of Masvidal Usman now headlining UFC 251. And I wrote, Masvidal is one of two fighters the UFC currently has where I receive phone calls from friends that are at best casual fans, and they tell me they are in to buy the pay-per-view. Now, the other fighter would be Conor McGregor, and it's because on Monday morning I got a call from a friend who said, he goes, look, I'm all in on buying the pay-per-view on Saturday. And he goes, the last time I bought a pay-per-view, I said, oh, Conor Cerrone in January. He goes, nope, Diaz Masvidal. And, you know, and I got a lot of interaction on it. Most of the interaction, I think, you know, understood where I was coming from. One of the responses that, I don't know if this guy was simply trying to troll me or not, said trying having more than two to three friends. And, you know, my first thought on that tweet was like, that response to my tweet was, man, do you not live outside the MMA bubble? Because I do live outside the MMA bubble. And sometimes I think that inside the MMA bubble, we look at certain fighters and we think that they are superstars. But in reality, when you have conversations with people who rarely watch combat sports or watch the UFC, you know, they don't know who Kamaru Usman is, but they sure as hell know who Jorge Masvidal is. And it's kind of crazy, Danny, when you think about the rise of Jorge Masvidal over the last 16 months or so. I mean, you got to go back to March of last year where he gets that win against Darren Till. Then, of course, there's the incident backstage where he does a three-piece and a soda line. Then, of course, a five-second knockout against Ben Askren. And now, and then, of course, the win against Nate Diaz back in November. The rise of Jorge Masvidal is unbelievable. And I think people have to understand that I think there's a combination of factors of why Jorge Masvidal has become this superstar that he has become over the last, you know, 16 months or so. And I think, you know, look, a big part of that is the Ben Askren knockout. But the other part is, it's the way he promotes himself.
Yeah. I mean, the Ben Askren knockout was probably the single most played mixed martial arts clip of 2019. I mean, it's 5 seconds. It's pretty easy to put on Twitter. And unfortunately for Ben Askren, it's pretty easy to bring back to life. Anything significant happens with Jorge Masvidal. But it is the promotion. It is his what he says on the microphone, the attitude he carries himself with. It's something that really resonates with fans. And Masvidal, I think one of the building blocks for him is he consistently keeps himself in the news. There is always a Jorge Masvidal article about something he's saying, about something else, some beef he has. And he is just a perfect mix of a lot of positive factors when it comes to building a star. He brings the newsworthiness in terms of every day on social media, he's probably going to say something interesting or in an interview. He brings the attitude as kind of like your the fighter you and your friends can get behind. His fights are damn entertaining, and it's an amazing story, and it's just it's pretty simple. I mean, he deserves the pay-per-view points. He likely added, I can't even give you a number because I don't have numbers to like compare to, but I can tell you this much. I feel very confident that Jorge Masvidal greatly, greatly, greatly improved the buy rate for UFC 251. I mean, I think he improved this buy rate by 20%, something like that. And that's a significant number because, like, a lot of people are already going to buy this fight card because we're hungry for pay-per-views. But Jorge Masvidal really validates this pay-per-view because it was stacked in the first place. But the Masvidal versus Usman fight is what can pierce the bubble and bring in the casual mixed martial arts fan. It's the type of fight, and the way it was put together also was also within a week of the fight, it now becomes a news story that this fight is happening, and then it gets boom, 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 a lot of momentum. So all those things, this situation happening greatly, greatly impacted the pay-per-view. And Masvidal is absolutely the most valuable fighter on this card as it pertains to the pay-per-view buy rate. And it's just been an amazing journey. You know, I mean, it really all started with the win over Darren Till, but the viral knockout of Ben Askren is what really exploded Masvidal. And it's so ironic that the growth of his career has gone this way, that for a lot of people now, that viral moment is when they knew his name. But ironically enough, for a lot of MMA fans, the first time Masvidal's name really resonated with them, you know, if they weren't watching him fight in Bodog, was when he got tapped out by Toby Amada with the inverted triangle choke. So it's kind of been a story of viral highlight reel moments that has been Jorge Masvidal's career. First, the inverted triangle choke in the Bellator lightweight tournament. And then it was the flying knee knockout. And it's just amazing the journey of Masvidal from a really skilled lightweight, but not necessarily a name that casual people know, to one of the top four or so biggest names in the UFC.
Another tweet that I want to mention comes from Greg Rosenthal of The Athletic, where he tweeted, Jorge Masvidal is proof that entertaining fights and a willingness to take on anyone anytime is just as valuable as winnings. Fans don't give a blank that he has 13 losses and never won a belt. He's approaching superstar level and headlining his second pay-per-view in the last 8 months, and that is 1,000% true by Greg Rosenthal. That is the world we live in. I understand that there are, you know, part of the MMA fan base that they may not like the fact of Jorge Masvidal has put himself in this situation, but this is a business for the UFC. It's the right thing they did here. And one of the things that I found very interesting, Daniel, was from the conversation that Jorge Masvidal had with Ariel Helwani, and I thought that he peeled back some of the pay aspect. And I want to let you hear exactly what Jorge Masvidal had to say. And to me, it peels back the onion on exactly what the issues were in terms of pay.
For them to pay me something outrageous, no. I'm asking you to just give me more money of what I do bring in off the pay-per-view side, and that's what we were fighting for. And we came to a pretty good deal, so I'm happy right now. You know, I'm not complaining about the current deal, but the initial deal with Gilbert Burns, I mean, with what's his name, was a deal on the pay-per-view end and on the guarantee side. So I have two negatives. I could understand you don't want to give me that much on the guarantee, but on the pay-per-view, what I bring in, what people purchase, I want more money of that, and they weren't budgeting with that, and neither was I. You know, so all this craziness had to happen for them to come to their senses.
And there's Jorge Masvidal, to me, Daniel, peeling back the onion that it was about pay-per-view points. And he is absolutely right. When you are at the star power that a Jorge Masvidal, yeah, you should be getting a big piece of the pay-per-view.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yes, 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 yes. It kind of shows you that Masvidal is a reasonable negotiator. He's not asking for the world and two other planets. He's asking to get paid what he's worth, and it's not even in a guarantee sense. It's in a, I'm going to bring you money, and if I do, I get the money. It's in a give me pay-per-view points. And it's a deal where when you show transparency, I personally believe the public will be on your side in this situation, because it's pretty simple. Jorge Masvidal being on this card is going to make the UFC a lot more money than a replacement level top tier welterweight. And it's a big difference. So for Masvidal, he gets in that cage and that fight happens, his payday is going to be through the roof. And you would want to see the guarantees, obviously. As a professional athlete, you want to get those guarantees up and up and up. But at the bare minimum, when you're a superstar athlete, you want those pay-per-view points to be as high as possible. And that's something that is absolutely reasonable and kind of shows that his demands weren't necessarily outrageous. And I know he probably moved the goalpost. I'm sure the guarantee was a much bigger deal. Again, I really believe that for Masvidal and the UFC, they wanted to come together, but it was a pride and ego thing. They had already asserted their positions, and it was going to require something to bring them together. This is what did that. That's why they probably moved. UFC came a little closer to Jorge. Masvidal came a little closer to the UFC, and that's why we're here today. But I think as a fan of the sport, when you see the dynamic of negotiations between the athlete and the bosses, it's hard not to relate to getting paid what you're worth. And to me, there is no better way to measure that than in pay-per-view points for your superstars that are bringing the people to their laptops to purchase this deal on ESPN Plus.
I mean, look, I was going to buy UFC 251 regardless. Now, look, obviously a lot of that is because, you know, I do make money on MMA just like you make money on MMA. But I am 1,000% more excited now that it's Jorge Masvidal versus Kamaru Usman than I was for Gilbert Burns. And you mentioned a little bit earlier, I mean, you feel for Gilbert Burns because there's no guarantee at this point that Gilbert Burns does get the next title shot. I can see a situation where if Jorge Masvidal pulls off the win on Sunday morning in Abu Dhabi, that, you know, Kamaru Usman gets an immediate rematch where, you know, Ali Abdelaziz, his manager, goes to the UFC and go, look, guys, we took this fight on 6 days' notice. We did you guys a solid. We didn't have to do this solid for you. How about you do a solid for us now and give us an immediate rematch? So this could really put Gilbert Burns in a weird position. Leon Edwards is now sitting out there. You know, he was the UFC wanted him initially in this fight when the Masvidal fight initially did not take place, but there's issues that he has. So, you know, he's kind of sitting out there. So it's a really weird position at the 170 pounds. But I did watch the interview Kamaru Usman did give Brett Okamoto, and I gotta play you this clip, Daniel, that I just thought was an absolutely hilarious clip from Kamaru Usman as he's talking about how he had not had a beer in 10 months, was about to have his first beer, and then his phone call. He got a phone call from his manager, Ali Abdelaziz.
Craziest thing is I haven't had a beer in I don't know how long, you know, maybe 10 months. And I'm actually at the airport and I'm walking by this Mexican restaurant in the airport in Dallas, DFW. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to have a beer and I'm going to order some Mexican food. I have the Mexican food. I had tacos and a quesadillas and rice and beans, all of it in a plate. As soon as I'm getting it, I had a beer, Bud Light. As soon as I'm getting it, I'm sitting it down. I'm literally twisting the cap off. This is 100% honest. I'm twisting the cap off. My phone rings. It's Ali. Like, hey, you got to fight. Well, let's go ahead and put this cap back on.
Oh my God.
I don't even take one swig of it. Not even one. What don't eat the food. Just kind of left it and got up and moved on.
Daniel, if I'm in his position, I think I'd at least take a sip.
I mean, I would definitely eat that dang quesadilla. That sounds delicious. I'm hungry right now. We're recording this. I want a quesadilla. I just, it's amazing how things like that happen in life, where he's about to drink the beer and he gets the call. I mean, the only thing is, like, how did Usman not know that they're trying to get this thing to work? I mean, I understand the attitude of, like, I've been working so hard, this is gone, time to get a beer. But dang, this was definitely something where as soon as this fight was called off, it's like, all right, we're getting the Masvidal fight. But, yeah, it shows the amount of discipline it takes to be a championship level athlete for Kamaru Usman, who's been just working so hard to get down this weight, to have that delicious, and I don't know how delicious it was in the airport, it may not have been that good, but that delicious Mexican plate with that Bud Light, yeah, it was either that or it was a sponsor by Bud Light who like gave him like some influencer money to come up with this story, because now I want a Bud Light. So I'm on to you, Kamaru Usman. But yeah, the timing was great. And you know, the other thought when I hear this story is like, it's so unfortunate. Usman's like the best welterweight in the world. He had like fight of the year basically with Colby Covington. Looked amazing against Tyron Woodley. When you listen to him on podcasts, like the Joe Rogan podcast, for example, comes across as this awesome dude, and his name doesn't resonate yet. This fight could be it for him. It's unfortunate that the Usman-Masvidal fight didn't get the pre-fight normal treatment, where you have the press conferences and stuff like that during normal circumstances, because those two guys obviously were trying to work an angle at Super Bowl weekend not that long ago. So that's unfortunate. But for Usman, the hope is this platform provides some type of springboard to greater change what he means to the casual fan, because this presents the best chance to do it. There will not be a better opponent to get more people into the Kamaru train.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that probably does hurt Kamaru Usman is the fact of, you know, this is a man that has more decision wins than he has knockout wins. And, you know, he is coming off that TKO win against Colby Covington, which was an absolutely tremendous fight. If you have not watched that fight, I'm sure if you're listening to this podcast, you have. But if not, that's definitely a fight to go check out. But when you look at all of his UFC main event spots and title fights, they've all made it to the fifth round. So I think that does kind of hurt him a little bit there. Let me ask you what's more likely in this fight? Zero successful takedowns by Kamaru Usman, or Jorge Masvidal wins by knockout?
What's more likely? Jorge Masvidal wins by knockout, big time. Oh, yeah. I think I know Usman took on Covington and both those wrestlers did not attempt a single takedown in their fight. But I think if Masvidal wins, it's going to be by knockout, because, or submission, I guess that could happen. But I don't think it's going to be by decision, just because Kamaru has displayed an unreal ability to continue to just come out like amazing in that fifth round. I mean, you think back to the Covington fight, and Kamaru's way of fighting is so tiring that even though Masvidal could probably run 14 marathons and then a triathlon afterwards, the wrestling style of Kamaru, which I think is going to come into play here, I think is going to likely be successful. Whereas in Masvidal, if you told me Masvidal wins by a knockout, I mean, I think that's his best chance to win, Jason, because that's kind of been the dynamic in a lot of his recent successes, has been that explosive knockout power. I mean, who knows? Maybe it's Masvidal getting that knockout off of Usman takedown attempt.
When I think about the fight, I'm really interested to see is, do we see Jorge Masvidal come out and, you know, kind of, you know, push the action in a way what his plan was against Ben Askren? And I think that the one advantage that I believe Jorge Masvidal has in this fight is, let's be honest about it, this is a guy who has been essentially preparing for Kamaru Usman for, you know, for the last 6 months or so. You know, I mean, yes, he wasn't in a typical training camp, but he was preparing for the wrestling aspect. Is, you know, if he can, I think the reality is this fight's going to hit second, third, maybe fourth, maybe even the fifth round. But is, if he can stop early takedown attempts, can he make this a standing fight? If this is a standing fight, Jorge Masvidal has a tremendous chance to win. But if you're telling me who's my pick, it's Kamaru Usman, and it's simply because of he has a big grappling advantage.
Yeah, he has a big grappling advantage. And even though, like, on paper, if you're telling me who has the stand-up advantage, it's Masvidal, I wouldn't be shocked if we come here and Usman outstrikes him. Just because Usman has a great ability to mix with the wrestling with the stand-up, and he's shown great success with the stand-up, where Masvidal spent a whole career kind of brawling, and just the technique is unreal and at a different level than Kamaru. But there are things Usman does in the cage with his movement and the evolution of his stand-up that he can hang with Masvidal on the feet, and he can have better exchanges with him. The expectation is pretty simple. Masvidal's going to get the better on the feet. You know, that's just the thought process heading into it. But Kamaru has become elite in so many different aspects of this sport that it's not unreal for me to imagine him winning a decision that's fought primarily on the feet. That's not the likely outcome. I think the likely outcome is Kamaru utilizing his wrestling, because that is a clear, clear, clear path to victory for him. Obviously, for Masvidal, he has a great chance to win here. This is his bread and butter, you know, going back to the street fighting days. This is a guy who's just chilling on a Sunday, and you tell him there's a fight going on an hour, you want in, he says, when and where? And he goes and he performs. And he is really set up well to perform in this type of environment. It would be beautiful if the story culminates with him as well to a champion. It's probably the result I want to see, because it's a big time story. It would mean a lot for this sport for Masvidal to win in this situation. Whoever he fights next would be a big time fight, and that would be great. But the theme is, the type of results I want to happen on this card likely will not happen, and my pick will be Kamaru Usman. Again, you simply cannot get past the wrestling advantage he may have against Masvidal, who spent a whole career shucking off takedowns. I don't necessarily know if he's going to be able to do it consistently against Kamaru, who I think will again continue to assert himself as the welterweight champion. Again, another concern to always have with Kamaru Usman is, you know, he constantly is dealing with so many different ailments with his body, and you just never know when that's just going to shut down on you. And he's been an athlete through and through for years on years on years. So that's a concern, is that I genuinely believe with Kamaru Usman, after listening to him talk about the way his body worked on the Joe Rogan podcast, I'm like, this dude's body is going to give up on him one day when he's in the prime of his career. Just because, I think he talked about going up and down the stairs, walking backwards. That sounds nuts to me. For a guy to do that, but then go and perform as a welterweight champion. So that's another concern, but Usman's the pick.
Now, of course, both of these guys are going to make a ton of money this weekend for this fight. And one of our presenting sponsors this week has a way for a free shot at the $1 million top prize, and that is DraftKings. We've heard all the rumors, but the wait is finally over. Fight Island is primed and ready to go. This Saturday, the Fighters will be taking their talents to Abu Dhabi for UFC 251. The lineup of fights this weekend is one of the best yet, and DraftKings, the leader in one-day fantasy sports, is putting you in the center of the action starting this week with a free shot at a $1 million top prize with your first deposit.
If you haven't tried it yet, Fantasy MMA is easy to play. Just pick six fighters, stay under the salary cap, and pile up points for advances, takedowns, and more. There is no better way to put your MMA knowledge to the test than to compete for a shot at $1 million. $1 million. But if MMA isn't for you, don't worry. DraftKings is offering plenty of fantasy golf action for this weekend's tournament. With millions of dollars up for grabs this week, there is no better place to have skin in the game than with DraftKings.
Of course, you know, I do a daily fantasy show every week, and you know, maybe if you're, you know, Kamaru Usman has been a DraftKings stud, but hey, if you're looking to take you know, one of those low price options, maybe you like Jorge Masvidal to win by knockout. He's one of those low price options at 7,300, or hell, maybe it's Max Holloway, who's also been a DraftKings stud. He's at 7,100, or hell, maybe you're going to go really out on a limb and you think Paige VanZant's going to pull off the victory. She's actually the lowest price salary fighter this week. DraftKings is your place to go. So all you got to do is download DraftKings app now and use the promo code MMA Report to get a free shot at the $1 million top prize for this weekend's UFC 251 contest with your first deposit. That's promo code MMA Report to get a free shot at $1 million with your first deposit only at DraftKings. Minimum $5 deposit required. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. Something I want to mention about Jorge Masvidal before we move on to the co-main event, Daniel, is if I am Dana White, he would never say this publicly, or anyone in the UFC would ever say anything publicly. If I am in Dana White's position, you know who I want to win the main event?
I'm assuming you're going with Game Bread here.
Could you imagine Masvidal wins? We get to the end of, say, this year, maybe beginning of 2021, and you can have fans in attendance. How big would it be? You could put this thing in Cowboy Stadium. Jorge Masvidal versus Conor McGregor.
Yeah, I think that'd be the biggest pay-per-view ever. Really. Really. I think it would. Because, like, it's just two stars colliding. People, I mean, it's going to be a bad idea to put everyone. It's going to be, this thing's got to get over. The coronavirus got to get over. But if we get some vaccine, we all get cleared and stuff. Like, think about it. Like, let's say, like, I'm praying to God we live in this reality where, like, we all get the vaccine and, like, it's done and we're back to normal life. And, like, right when we're getting back to normal life, it's like, all right, guys, you miss being in arenas, watching sporting events. We're going to Cowboy Stadium. All that built up energy to just return to normal life with the biggest possible fight. Oh, no, that's a dream. So anyways, now that we thought about that for a moment, let's get back to reality. But that would be the dream for the UFC. Masvidal, Conor, finally, Cowboy Stadium. And with only a minute to analyze this possibility, I would say this would be the biggest UFC pay-per-view, obviously not counting Conor versus Floyd.
Oh, it would be a massive area. I mean, but like that's just me saying if I was running the UFC, that would be my host because that could be an absolute huge fight for the UFC.
Yeah, can I say something real quick? How the hell did the UFC go to Leon Edwards first before Masvidal? Like, I know Leon deserves it, all this nonsense, but if the UFC's in the money-making business, your first, second, third, fourth, and fifth call are to Jorge Masvidal. And if he doesn't, if he says no all those five times, you give him one more ring before you try anyone else. Like, Leon deserves it, but why are you calling other guys when the clear choice is Jorge Masvidal? That's my big question.
Dude, you know the answer to that question. It's money.
I know. Yes, but they're going to make so much more money. There will be more money in their bank account with Masvidal, even if you're paying them more cheddar, than if it was Edward Usman. Without a doubt, in my opinion. Just my thoughts. I mean, who knows? I don't know what's going on under the great veil of the UFC's financial situation. But it is of my opinion, even if the UFC gives more pay-per-view points to Jorge, they will have more money in their bank account with this Masvidal-Usman fight.
Look, all I'm just saying is MMA God, just give us this fight on Saturday night, because
it's true.
It is the fight that we all want to see, and thankfully we're getting it. But I mean, look, you look top to bottom, especially this pay-per-view, it's a great pay-per-view lineup that the UFC has put together. You look at the co-main event of Volkanovski versus Holloway, of course, rematch of the fight that took place last year where Alexander Volkanovski dethroned Max Holloway as the UFC featherweight champion. And Daniel, I got to play you this clip of Max Holloway. And when we get done with this clip, I just want your simple answer of, do you believe the former UFC featherweight champion?
It was challenging. It's challenging indeed. You know, it was difficult, you know, but we're going to find out who the true fighters, who the true warriors, who the true people who really love this get to do it. You know, at the end of the day, I didn't want to put none of my coaches in harm's way or getting arrested or whatever. You know, the stay-at-home order in Hawaii was pretty serious. I know people was getting to gyms and stuff, but a lot of the way I was training was exactly like this. It was over Zoom. You know, they was doing Zoom classes as we was training. You know, I didn't really get to get too much, you know. But the first time seeing my coaches was meeting them at the airport from Vegas and coming here. So it's just how you adapt, you know. I'm ready. We're good.
Well, you know, Jason, I tell you what, this reminds me of whenever I was growing up. I used to have cattle, used to own cows and whatnot, and it just reminds me of that because it smells like bullshit to me. That is BS. That is malarkey. I do not believe that Max Holloway spent his entire training camp in his room with his beanie bag and his, you know, doing Zoom MMA training. Like, that would be great. If everyone acted like this hypothetical Max Holloway, I think maybe we'd have been done with the coronavirus. I do not believe that for a second. Everybody has been getting in a gym and doing this at a high level of mixed martial arts. That is the preparation that is required. It just feels like Max is just like doesn't want to admit it, even though it's okay for athletes to train like athletes, even if they have to maybe limit the amount of people with them. But yes, Jason, that is absolute BS. I do not believe we are having a guy challenge for the featherweight title, and his only training has been through Zoom.
Yeah, I don't believe it at all. I mean, this is what I think. This would be my perception of it, is that Max did not want to say in a public forum that potentially him and his coaches were in his gym because of the stay-at-home orders that we have all, you know, dealt with, you know, over the past couple months. And in his particular situation in Hawaii, I feel like that's maybe him trying to protect his coaches and his gyms. But yeah, I find it hard to believe. But I think in thinking about this rematch on Saturday night, of course, Sunday morning in Abu Dhabi, is, you know, when you think about the first fight, it was the leg kicks that Alexander Volkanovski was able to land, particularly in the first, second, and third rounds of those fights. Is, will Max make adjustments? I think that is the key of, will he be able to stop those leg kick attempts, and, you know, check those kicks coming from Volkanovski?
I think the question is, can he make those adjustments? Because he's going to try. There's no way he's not going to try and make those adjustments. They were the story of the fight, and it was probably a very painful reminder in the days afterwards. The leg kicks were why Volkanovski really controlled Holloway. You know, the 48-47 scorecards don't do it justice. I know one was 50-45, but two of them were 3-2. Then they don't do it justice how clearly Volkanovski beat Holloway. It was a clear-cut win for him, and it was so clear that there was plenty of discussion that maybe Max doesn't deserve the automatic rematch. Here we are. I'm excited. Max was a real good featherweight champion. And it certainly does make sense he's getting this opportunity. But the leg kicks were the story of that fight. Obviously, Max is going to try and adjust. But the big question is, can he? It's a very difficult tactic to adjust to, the leg kick. I mean, it's so consistent, and it's become such a dangerous tool for fighters to employ. You got to think everyone has some type of strategy to avoid the leg kick, but it may be something that's just downright unavoidable. So maybe in those Zoom meetings, they've come together with some type of leg kick defense, some type of stance switch, but I just don't know if there's an adjustment other than fighting outside of the cage that will allow him to defend those leg kicks, and that's why Volkanovski's my pick. Clearly, he's had all this time to think of some type of strategy. I just don't know how that strategy can come into fruition against such an elemental strike that is so easy to execute.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of these fights I keep going back and forth on who am I picking in the fight. It's like, you know, am I going to pick Volkanovski or do I pick Holloway? I'm going to go with Max Holloway here in the upset. I think his volume will be the key to victory in this one. But I mean, look, I think it's a close fight. I think this fight will go all 25 minutes. I think it's a fight that primarily will be on the feet. But I mean, look, if Max Holloway is being completely honest with, you know, his training schedule, yeah, that to me is a massive concern of whether you want to pick him or not. I mean, you know, the fact of saying that he had no sparring, I think there's plus and advantage of that. But looking forward to that matchup, Peter Yan versus Jose Aldo. Two notes I wrote down about this fight, Daniel, is one, Peter Yan is 6-0 in the UFC. Two of those wins have come against fighters in the top 5 that are currently ranked in the top 15. Jimmy Rivera, who's currently ranked 9th. John Dodson, who's ranked 13th. When I pulled that up, in a way, like, I was kind of surprised. I was like, wow. But then I was like, yeah, I mean, so, I mean, look, I think in an ideal world, this matchup would be Peter Yan versus Aljamain Sterling. That would be the ideal vacant bantamweight title fight. But on the other side of this, Jose Aldo, I think it's a very legitimate question. If he wins the title on Saturday, here in the U.S., Sunday over there in Abu Dhabi, where does this put him on the GOAT list? And where does he rank in terms of the best two division champions?
Ooh, that's a good question. I mean, I don't know how much higher is going to move him up the GOAT list, because I think this guy already deserves to be pretty damn high up on it. I was thinking about this when we were, you know, as I was preparing for this podcast. I don't think people remember where Aldo was, because the difference between Aldo and so many of the other, the difference that separates the GOATs of this sport and like the elite champions and then the champions in general is this idea of when the cage door locks, you're screwed. This idea of unlimited potential, this idea that you were born to be the champion and it's unreasonable to imagine anyone beating you. And Aldo achieved that. The one word to come to mind during Aldo's WEC featherweight championship run and his UFC featherweight championship run would be the word phenom. It was one of the most dominant championship runs we've seen out of anyone in this sport, period. It was there was a much bigger mystique to Aldo's run than Demetrius Johnson's run. A big part of it was the leg kicks. A big part of it was the finishes, the first round finishes, and the utter violent domination of Uriah Faber in fighters like that. So I guess I think Aldo's already up on the GOAT list, but it's important to remember that this dude was not only the GOAT, he was like a phenom goat. I mean, this was one nasty goat. I mean, that's great goat milk. So I think it would help his legacy. I just don't know if he's going to be able to overthrow GSP or John Jones, even though John Jones is an issue. But it would be amazing. He's the guy I want to win. It's just great nostalgia and just an unbelievable story. But first, he's got to make weight. Like, that's going to be a tough one. Like, let's keep an eye out on weigh-in day. I think that might be a tough weight cut for him to do this during the pandemic in overseas fight, international fight. So that's a concern at 135 for Aldo. So keep an eye out for that. But then the fight's going to start, and he's taking on Peter Yan, who literally, doesn't he come across like a just a machine that was sent to this planet to outstrike people with his boxing?
Oh, no question. I mean, look, I think Petr Yan, he is my pick in the fight. The only underdog in the title fights I'm picking is Max Holloway. I think Petr Yan is going to get the win, and I think it's going to be, you know, his volume of punches. I think there's a good chance that he does finish Jose Aldo at some point. I mean, when you think about the list of two division champions, so it's Conor McGregor, Daniel Cormier, Amanda Nunes, Henry Cejudo, and George St. Pierre. I'm not even sure how I would rank them. Hell, I might put Amanda Nunes number one just because of the fact that she's defending both titles. I think that's a big part of it. I don't know if, I mean, Aldo, I mean, yeah, I think we do forget about the run he had. And you know, prior to that Conor McGregor fight, I don't know where I would rank Aldo if he does win the title in terms of the fighters that have won a title in two weight classes in the UFC.
I think Aldo would be above Cormier and Cejudo, just because I know Cormier and Cejudo's records have far less blemishes and they look great on paper, but just living through all those reigns, the run Aldo went on was more impressive to me in the moment than the Cejudo and the DC run. But it's a good question to have, and it's possible because of what you brought up. Petr Yan has looked great, but there still is questions about the level of fighters he has beaten. He's beaten some good guys in Dodson Rivera, but he hasn't proved it time and again, time and again, time and again. His most recent win is over a guy who's retired probably three or four times at this point, Uriah Faber, and he dominated him. But that's the expectation. You take any top seven bantamweight, you put him against Uriah Faber, he's going to earn himself a championship shot with that performance. So that's a concern, but... And again, Aldo looked really good. I mean, bear in mind, this guy is coming off a loss to Marlon Moraes, a very close decision a lot of people had him beating, which is like impressive as hell. But he looked great, but this is still a fighter who has fought very flat at times. And it's something where the losses he's had are starting to look a lot better with the benefit of hindsight. Obviously, losses to Holloway, McGregor, Volkanovski, Marlon Moraes. It's nothing to snuff at. So I want to see an upset. I think for me, I'm picking all the favorites in these fights. The fight where I think the upset's most likely is probably the Holloway one, I guess. But for some reason, I have a weird feeling that Aldo's going to come out on top, even though I'm picking Petr Yan.
Of course, we're going to get back to the UFC 251 conversation here momentarily. I do want to tell you about our other presenting sponsor this week, and that is Lost Empire Herbs. We told you about them last week. They're back here on the program. I can tell you about what I took from Lost Empire Herbs, and that is their pre-workout, their Hercules. It's helped me out. I'm not necessarily going to the gym, but I'm running around, you know, my neighborhood trying to get that workout in, and this has definitely helped boost my performance. So you got to check out that. Of course, Lost Empire Herbs, one of the great things about this company is that they have a 365-day empty bag or bottle money back guarantee. Try it and love it. If not, nothing. You just send it back and with an email for a full refund. Everything is backed by independent lab testing, stricter heavy metal standards than the government. Use the new herbal quiz to find out the right herb or formula for you. That's exactly what I did. Took the quiz to figure out which one was best for me. And take the advice from MMA fighter Derek Kennington. He says, all the herbs I've tried helped me perform as a professional MMA fighter and Brazilian jiu-jitsu coach. It gets rough when I don't take my Lost Empire herbs on a regular basis. I can physically tell a difference. My mood is different, and I don't recover as fast.
Yeah, bro, Lost Empire Herbs is awesome, man. I love Lost Empire Herbs. Yeah, I got the Phoenix Rejuvenation Formula in capsule form, and then the Lost Empire deal I got for the formula was the Spartan formula, so yeah, I have both these. And what I love about Lost Empire Herbs is, like, I am not a professional athlete, but I want to get in great shape, and I want to try professional wrestling, and that's what I do. And that combination is a very hard lifestyle on, like, my energy depletes it like crazy. Like, I want to do push-ups and squats and sit-ups and do some weightlifting, and then later in the day go to professional wrestling training. And the thing is, with the Phoenix rejuvenation formula and the Spartan formula, what this has helped me a lot in is focus and an energy, man. Like usually I'll get real tired midway through the day and I'll take a 10-hour nap and I'll wake up and it's already nighttime. But with the Spartan formula, with the Phoenix rejuvenation formula, it really does rejuvenate me. It gives me the energy that I need. It feels just like I'm one with the earth. I love Lost Empire Herbs. You got to check them out.
And for 15% off, visit lostempireherbs.com/MMA report. That is LostEmpireHerbs.com/MMA report and enter MMA report when you check out for 15% off, and appreciate their support here of the MMA report podcast. Of course, on the main card of UFC 251, Daniel, we've got another rematch, a rematch that was a title fight. This time it's a 3-round fight, and that's Jessica Andrade versus Rose Namajunas. You know, first off, I would tell you, I was surprised to see how big of a betting favorite that Rose Namajunas is in this fight. I mean, I think that when we think about their first fight, I think we naturally think about how the fight ended, and Rose is just over a 2-to-1 betting favorite in this fight. But I think my other big takeaway from the fight was Rose was looking great in the first round of that fight.
Yeah, dude, the switch definitely flipped in that fight. It was a great first round from Rhodes. That's probably why she's the favorite here on the odds, in that if you take the majority of this fight, Rhodes looks better, technical standpoint. Stand-up is just great. But, man, round two, Andrade turned things around in a hurry, eventually knocking her out with the slam. And I think the reason why Rhodes is the favorite here, I think a big reason might just be the fact that she's more of like a public favorite. Like, you know how like in football, like the Packers and the Cowboys get bet on more because they're just like a team that, you know, just everyone has an opinion on. I feel like that's kind of the situation here with Rose versus Andrade. Like, I think Andrade is incredibly skilled, but she's just not a known commodity, and there's money on the table here. I think Andrade is going to beat Rose here. I think she's incredibly, incredibly skilled with her ferocity and her wrestling, her power. And although Rose controlled Jessica Andrade pretty convincingly in round one, I think in this rematch, Andrade is going to take the lesson she learned with that and bring her aggressive nature earlier on in the fight. She will not have to be worried about being gassed in rounds 4 and 5. And that's why I like Jessica Andrade to win this fight.
I do feel that Rose is fighting for a title shot here.
Yeah, I mean, it's realistic where she could have gotten a title shot. I mean, she's just like, her and Joanna are always one win away from a title shot in this division. It's as simple as that. I mean, they are major stars and incredibly skilled, and their names just mean more than every other women's strawweight. So Rose and Joanna are just consistently in that. Win one fight and you get that opportunity back. But when you look at the way Rose lost her title, it's warranted too. I mean, you could have made a case that she deserved it right away, because you're right. She won that first round. It was clear. And she got knocked out on a slam. That's a crazy situation. And it was a great fight, by the way. So Rose beats Jessica. She gets a title opportunity for sure.
Yeah. And then, of course, your opening fight of the night is going to be Amanda Ribas versus Paige VanZant. Let me ask you this question about the fight. What would surprise you more? Paige VanZant wins, or Paige's next fight is in the UFC?
Paige's next fight in the UFC would surprise me more, actually, because the smoke signals have been there for like a year, bro. Right, we've been talking about Paige fighting in Bellator for like a year, or at least Paige exploring free agency for a year. So the UFC, man, they've been pooling all their money closer and closer to their chest. The one deal is Paige can be a free agent. There isn't any fight cards for any other promotion out there, unless she wants to go fight for LFA, which I don't know if they're going to pay her. So that's like the worst time for Paige VanZant to be a free agent, but I still think she's going to go somewhere else. And even though Amanda Ribas is the pick here, this is still a fighter with only 3 UFC fights. I know she was just downright dominant. I mean, we're talking wide scorecards. Against Randa Marcos, she absolutely dominated her. She showed her ability to wrestle and strike, and it was just unbelievable. It was the fight where you're watching and you're like, damn, Amanda Ribas, she's going to challenge for a title one day. But It is only three or so UFC fights, and the reason why the PVZ victory is less surprising than her fighting again in the UFC is that she has a lot of experience in this sport, and most importantly, the positional possibility of having positional control with her wrestling to win a decision is a possibility here. She's had some tough losses to Jessica Rose Clark and Michelle Waterson. So I don't expect her to win, but it's certainly a possibility for a person who's been fighting in the UFC since 2014.
I think the UFC is throwing paste to the wolves here because they know that her days are likely done in the UFC. Look, I would be fairly surprised if Paige VanZant's next fight is not in Bellator. I mean, and look, and I think that's also saying that, you know, I know Paige loves fighting, you know, but obviously there is a career for her outside of fighting if she wants to go that route. But yeah, I think it's all the writing is on the wall that this will be Paige VanZant's last fight. And I think she's being thrown to the wolves. I expect Amanda Ribas to win here, and I think she will win by stoppage.
I think she will win. She's being thrown to the wolves. I still think it's outrageous that Amanda Ribas is a minus 900 favorite against Paige VanZant. Like that is reserved for champions. Amanda's not a champion right now. I know she's looked great. I know she dominated Randal Marcos. She has 10 professional fights. She has three fights in the UFC. She's beaten Emily Whitmire, Mackenzie Dern, and Randal Marcos. She should not be a 900 favorite against Paige VanZant. She's going to win this fight, right? Like, most people who are 900 favorites win fights. But it is insane to me that the odds are so heavily in her favor.
No, look, I don't disagree with you. I mean, when I saw that betting odds, I was like, holy crap, that's a large line. But yeah, I mean, I think the betting public understands that when they look at this fight, I think they all see exactly where this is going. I just want to pull up, I want to see where this line actually started at. So it started at, when the line opened, Daniel, on Five Dimes, Amanda Ribas was minus 315. She has been bet all the way up to minus 900.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, that just tells you that it's been the influence. That's a major influence. So I don't know who in their right mind would put $10 on a minus 900 bet. I mean, you'll maybe make your money back. You'll get a little bit of money back, you know, a dollar or whatever. But damn. That's just crazy to me.
So they opened the line at minus 315 last May 22nd at just before 6 p.m. Within an hour, it already been, or a couple hours, it had already been bet down to minus 410. So that told you where the betting public thinks this fight. And yeah, I think you're going to see a win here by Amanda Ribas. Now, let's wrap up this week's edition of the show by talking about the preliminary card. True or false? The most intriguing fighter on the prelims is Yuri, who's taking on Volkan Oezdemir.
Yeah, true. When a guy gets a UFC opportunity and he takes on a fighter like Volkan Oezdemir, who is like really damn good, then you know this guy's got a whole lot of hype. And Yuri is a name that maybe people have not seen in formats other than highlight reels, because I think where a lot of people have seen him is whenever there's a Ryzen card and he gets that knockout, whether it be over King Mo or Brandon Halsey or CB Dolloway, they'll see the highlight video on Twitter or on their favorite mixed martial arts website. But Yuri is a big time 205 prospect, 27 years old. I think every time we get a guy with potential in the heavyweight or light heavyweight division, our ears perk up even more than any other divisions because they seem like more rare commodity among the male weight classes. So Yuri versus Volkan is just a huge fight because if Yuri is getting an incredibly hard admittance exam into the UFC, and if he's able to pass this test, he's going to skyrocket up the UFC rankings.
I got another true false for you. Best fight on the prelims is Dos Santos versus Salikov.
I'm going to go false on that one, Jason.
Who would you say the best fight is then?
I'm going to go with Leonardo Santos versus Roman Bogatov. Leonardo Santos has literally been fighting in the UFC since like 2013. And he's just never lost, Jason. The dude's never lost. Granted, there was like a 3-year period where he didn't fight. So that's a big reason why. But Leonardo Santos undefeated. And it speaks to his opponent's quality that he's only a minus 175 favorite against Roman. So that's why that lightweight contest is more exciting to me than Zaleski Dos Santos and Salikov. But I will grant you that if you were telling me the other fight that I'm looking forward to in those prelims, it would be Zaleski Dos Santos and Salikov.
Leonardo versus Roman is my under-the-radar fight.
Yeah, I mean, Leonardo's nickname might be under the radar, right? It might be under the... This dude has not lost, like since 2013 in the UFC. Are you kidding me? What more? Like, this dude, yeah, this dude, he's, I'm sure, gone through a lot of adversity with the lack of fights. But yeah, Leonardo is under the radar. But I mean, what gets your socks in a willy with Zaleski and Salikov?
I just think that it's a fight that's going to be action packed. You look at, you know, fact of you look at Salikov, you know, 12 of his 16 wins have come via knockout. 14 of Dos Santos' 22 wins have come by knockout. You kind of get what I'm throwing out here.
Yeah, definitely from a fight entertainment standpoint. In addition to their skill levels, this is a pretty nice mixture.
Dude.
So I get what you're throwing down.
Dos Santos has a knockout via spinning wheel kick. How do you not get excited for that?
Yeah, I'm excited for that. I'm excited. Those prelims are dope. Like, it's not household names, but those four prelims, bro, are dope as hell. The Santos fight matters. You have Yuri. And Zaleski and Salikov, I mean, yeah, you got me hyped up for Zaleski Salikov. I might change my answer.
Dude, I'm interested. Look, I'm looking forward to just sitting on my couch on Saturday. I'll do the show on Awesome-O 90 minutes before these fights starts. Myself and Pete Rogers Jr., you know, taking people's questions on the DFS side of things. And then I'm going to sit on the couch, you know, and basically the way it rolls for me, Daniel, is I watch the prelims and then main card start right as the pay-per-view starts. It's all right, go to the fridge, get the Stella bottle out. Pop it off, pour it to a glass, and start enjoying some beer.
That's the best way to do it, man. There ain't nothing more peaceful than drinking a beer while watching people punch each other in the face. I cannot wait. You know, the UFC has been like, it's so ironic that face punching has been the sign of peace and calm and serenity during this tough time, but that's the case. It's like the time I can just unplug, just watch the TV, and then I can, you know, get back to reality, which is not a fun reality right now, but I just love it so much, and I cannot wait for it. It's a big-time card, a big-time fight. I can't wait to talk to my friends about it through text message, about what transpires, because it's a fight that matters, and you can't ask for much more if you're a mixed martial arts fan.
And of course, this week starts a UFC run where they're going to have at least one show once a week, every week. The next time we have a break between fights is going to be between August 29th and September the 12th. So all the way up to August 29th, we've got UFCs at least once a week. Contender Series is starting up here at beginning of August. We've got a fight night card next Wednesday, Dan Ige versus Calvin Kattar. I know Calvin was on the charter flight last night that took off from Las Vegas. So he is on there. As a recording of this podcast, we do know that Pedro Munhoz is out of the co-main event for that fight card, taking on Frankie Edgar. Maybe by the time this podcast comes out, that maybe Frankie Edgar is going to have a new opponent. I know Jimmy Rivera has told his management he wants in that fight. The other day, it was kind of now funny in a way of me and Pete were talking, and I was like, oh man, Ricky Simone is with Paige VanZant, part of her corner for this fight. Of course, they both trained there at American Top Team in Portland, and I said, Ricky Simone could be a nice little backup plan if we have a 35-pound fight fall out. And I initially looked right at Pedro Munhoz, Frankie Edgar. I was like, if someone pulls out of that fight and doesn't make it, Ricky Simone could be that guy. And on Monday night when the news came out about Munhoz being out of the fight, Ricky Simone, he kind of did the hand raise on Twitter. And my understanding is it's his team has let the UFC know they're ready to take that fight.
Wow, that would be great. That would be great, because for him, talk about a great, great chance to just boom. I'm a factor in bantamweight division. Get a great win over Ray Borg recently, and for Ricky Simone, I mean, that is It's a great time to be in Yaz Island right now if you're weighing 135 pounds.
Dude, I mean, that's one of the things that's going to be a lot different about these Fight Island events as opposed to the events in Las Vegas, where there may not necessarily just be someone the UFC could turn to that we've seen, you know, like Julian Arosa a couple of weeks ago, Justin James a couple of weeks ago, who turned in and was able to, you know, step up and take the fight. That's going to be the interesting thing about Fight Island, but I'm looking forward to it. Of course, be sure to subscribe to this show, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio. Also, be sure to subscribe to the MMA Report on YouTube. Let's show some of the latest interviews I have up there. Talk to Dustin Lampros, who is going to be headlining the Shamrock FC card on September the 11th in Missouri. It's actually his last fight on his Shamrock deal. If he gets a win here, he'll be 6-0. He trains down there at Sanford MMA. Definitely a guy to keep your eye on, potentially, you know, getting into the UFC maybe at some point this year. Also, talk to Fabio Charrant, who is going to be a part of LFA 86 later on this month, as it'll be his first fight since losing on the Contender Series. Also spoke to Mando Gutierrez, who will be a part of LFA 86, spoke to Justin Wetzel, who will be a part of next week's LFA 85. Also, speaking of LFA, they've got a fight card on Friday on Fight Pass. I talked to Nathan Levy, who's going to be a part of that fight card, trains out of Syndicate MMA there in Las Vegas. Also spoke to Jordan Levitt, who's going to be a part of LFA 85 next week. So LFA, this will be a first week of four straight events for them in South Dakota. So got some coverage up there on the MMAreport.com. Be sure to check that out. One of the fighters that's going to be on Friday's card is Sean West. I spoke to him. He's taking on Boston Salmon. Daniel, one of the most interesting part about when I talked to Sean West is he has trained with Boston in the past. And he said that when he, so, you know, he's like, man, we've sparred together when I've gone out to Vegas. Like, he's like, I'm not saying we're best buds, but, you know, we know each other. And I had his number. And so when this fight was offered to me, he goes, I text him. And I just go, hey, man, just trying to let you know that I didn't ask LFA for this fight. It was just offered to me. If you're down, I'm down. And that's how the fight got made.
Wow, that's some respect there, and I hope those two guys, that sounds like a great interview, I hope those two guys go out there, put on a great fight, and afterwards Sean West and Boston Salmon can, you know, go drink a socially distanced beer together after they fight at LFA 84. That's a good card, man. I'm glad that the LFA is running. I know they have decent infrastructure behind them, and it's nice to see those guys get a little bit of an opportunity as they are kind of, I mean, just think of how many fighters who fought in LFA and had success that are on the current UFC Fight Island cards. It's a long list. So, yeah, so those sound like some damn good interviews. People got to check them out.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's great to see, you know, regional shows now happening. I know, in speaking to a manager the other day, the manager hinted to me, he's like, hey, man, we're getting calls on some of these regional shows coming back. I know Valor Fighting Challenge did a show in Tennessee last week. They did an amateur show. They're going to start doing pro shows again. So, you know, it's, you know, you feel for fighters who, like, are on the verge of, you know, potentially getting into the UFC, that, you know, this has set their career back, you know, and or that fighter that, you know, maybe, you know, they're in their early 30s and, you know, they're like, man, I've, you know, if I'm going to make a run at the UFC now, my time is now, and this has kind of hurt them. So those to me are the fighters I think about. But yeah, it's I'll probably be tuning in to LFA on Friday night, because, well, basically here in Florida, you essentially really don't want to leave your house. I mean, pretty much all I do is I stay at home, I come to my office in St. Petersburg, I live in Tampa, I go to the grocery store, maybe go to Target if I got to pick something up. But outside of that, Daniel, I'm not really going where much, because, you know, crazy, we'll end on this comment. So last week we talked about coronavirus, and of course in the past shows you've talked about, you know, how coronavirus has hit home with you. I had a buddy, like, we did the show Tuesday afternoon that night, and on the show I mentioned I did not know anybody personally that had got the coronavirus. Get a call that night, buddy says, man, just found out last night, it tested positive.
Unbelievable that happened. And God, that's sad, man. It's crazy. It's so crazy. It's like, it's unbelievable, man. It's just like, it's one of those deals where people we all know now have it, which is just unbelievable when it comes to how we thought about this deal a long time ago, huh? I mean, think about this. Think about all the fights that have been canceled because fighters or corpsmen have got COVID. If we had that rate, and it's not a big rate, by the way. I mean, it's just, you know, one or two fights per card. But if we had, and I know we did have Jacare, but if we had a higher rate in the beginning portion of the UFC run, I mean, they would have been in a lot of trouble. But now, so many professional athletes are testing positive with COVID that it's almost like it's all noise, you know? FC Dallas got it. So many NBA players got it. My favorite baseball player, Joey Gallo, has it. I can't remember who's got it, so I don't know who to get pissed about for doing sports. So it's like so many people have it, then now we just are kind of like, oh, whatever, just keep on going. Like, that's literally life now. It's amazing how much we've changed.
Yeah, I mentioned this to you in text message the other day of, like, you know, because you sit at home and you're watching ESPN, you see the crawl of, you know, this player from MLB tested positive, this player from the NBA tested positive, NHL player tested positive, and of course, obviously, all those sports, every one of the players on the teams are getting tested. I do, you know, and obviously, the UFC is not testing every single fighter that's on the roster. It's only going to be people who are, you know, have a fight. So I wonder, and look, we'll never know the answer to this question. I just wonder, you know, I think, you know, it's like 600 fighters are in contract with the UFC. If all 600 fighters got tested, you know, today, would the amount of positive tests be similar to what we've seen in other sports?
I think the answer would be yes. And I think a lot of these athletes have been socially distancing, like most humans. I'm sure some haven't. There are some outliers. But the reason why I would say the answer would be yes is if we're doing a power rankings of sports you do, in which it's probably likely that you will give COVID to somebody else, mixed martial arts is pretty damn high on the list. I mean, shoot, you know, if you're an MMA fighter, you're training, you're out there wrestling, you're out there mixing with one another, I would bet that number would be very similar, if not higher. But it's not something we'll know just because of the UFC. The priority is, like, let's test everybody who's in the fight card. So, I mean, instead of testing the whole roster, you just test the fighters, and it's a deal where we'll probably only hear about the COVID news if it's a fighter or a corner, because then that fight will get canceled. Whereas if it's somebody else who tests positive within that UFC environment, I don't know if that news will actually hit the news wire.
Yeah, no, it's just something that, you know, just watching the crawl on ESPN, it made me think about it. And, you know, look, it's, you know, I mean, I know this, it's altered my world, just like it's altered a lot of people's world. But looking forward to watching UFC 251 on Saturday. So that is going to wrap it up for this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast. Be sure to check out our presenting sponsors this week, DraftKings and Los Empire Herbs. DraftKings is giving the MMA Report podcast listener a free shot at the Millionaire Contest this week with your first deposit. All you got to do is download the DraftKings app now and use that promo code MMA Report to get a free shot at the $1 million top prize for the big GPP contest this weekend. For UFC 251 and for the MMA Report podcast listener, Lost Empire Herbs is giving you 15% off your order when you go to lostempireherbs.com/MMA Report and enter MMA Report at checkout. So that is going to wrap it up for this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast, which comes out every Wednesday on RadioInfluence.com.
This is a place for my head quick picks on Radio Influence.
First and foremost, Jarrett Reddick, lead singer of Bowling for Soup, welcome to the podcast.
I learned that I had major fucking depression. And so for those who are listening to this right now, you know, you can probably imagine what that was like for me, because I'm in the fun band. I'm also considered to be, you know, somewhat of a comedian, and I'm always happy. And that diagnosis was both devastating for me, and it was also a huge weight off my shoulder. At least there was some reason why I was feeling the way that I was, but I was just devastated in that, like, I just could not understand why. I think a lot of people hear the word depression and they think it means sad. Well, it doesn't. That's not, I mean, it does that you're depressed, but you can be depressed and then you can have depression. Those are, you know, they're different things. And so you know, I had a real rough go of it. I gained a lot of weight. I'm still really heavy. I would get depressed about my weight, and that would make me even more, you know, and then I couldn't get motivated to exercise, and then I couldn't get motivated. You know, it just a vicious cycle, man. And, you know, it was really hard because, you know, people are mean, but people are also just, observant. And so, you know, all of a sudden on the internet, everybody's talking about how fat I am and all of this. And it's just like, okay, well that, you know, and I'm just trying to exist and be happy.
A Place for My Head with Brandon Thompson and Jerry P. Tuck can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Podcasts, and RadioInfluence.com.